When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you guys about the MLB Roto Baller Challenge, hosted by our friends at Fantrax and Fantrax.com. Fantrax is the most customizable free fantasy baseball platform in the industry, and that's why we're hosting over our 2022 Roto Baller Challenge over on Fantrax. If you want the greatest fantasy experience, sign up for a free Roto Baller Challenge team today by going to rotoballer.com/challenge. All leagues are free to join, and you get to compete against Roto Baller writers and readers for a shot at $500 cash grand prize. All new Fantrax users get entered into a free giveaway to win a signed official MLB Wander Franco jersey. If you want to get entered to win a Wander Franco jersey and you're new to Fantrax, go to Fantrax.com/Bubba and sign up for your free Fantrax account today. Once you have your Fantrax account, go to rotoballer.com/challenge to join the challenge league, but go to Fantrax.com/Bubba to create your Fantrax account, be entered to win a Wander Franco autographed jersey. But for now, welcome to Benched with Bubba. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 457. Got a returning guest to the show, a great guest to the show. Just got done drafting a main event. It's about 10, 15 minutes ago, so he's fresh off the cuffs. And we're going to get some immediate thoughts on how things went. And it was pretty impressive what he did, because he called his shot, let's put it that way, out the gate. You can find him on Twitter at DraftCheat and all his work over at Run Pure Sports. Pete, how we doing, man?
I'm good. Yeah, coming off a draft that I was really happy with how it turned out. You and I were talking these last couple of days about possibly streaming it live, you know, maybe on a delay or maybe just recording it live as I did the draft. But I chickened out this morning. I got cold feet. The funny part was I DM'd you this morning before I went on a long run trying to clear my head before the draft today. And by the time I got back from the run, I had like, you know, my confidence was up. Out into Colorado Sun, I was like, why did I tell him I didn't want to do that? Now I want to do it again. But I had waffled like two or three times already. I'm like, all right, I just got to stick to this plan at this point. So good draft. It would have been fun to do it live, especially because kind of called my shot on the first few rounds and what I wanted and end up getting those guys. So it would have been fun to get that on air. But overall, great draft and happy to be back potting with you. I don't know. Did we end up doing one last year? I feel like
we did. I don't know. Did we last year with the weird season?
I'm not sure we did. Between like the COVID season and then, I don't know, even last year was a little weird. And into the CBA, my podcasting game has been, haven't been on as many as I would like, just because there's just been so much uncertainty around baseball. It's just like, it's been hard for me to get super enthusiastic about it, you know, before they reach the new CBA and COVID stuff, but certainly ready to go and happy with my draft tonight.
Good. That's great to hear, because, you know, drafts can be fun. And I kept telling you, I'm like, if you don't want to do it live, I get it. I totally get it. Like, I'm not going to force you to do that. It's a big deal. Big 15 team main event for those that keep track of that at home. So he called his shot, and we're going to go round by round and kind of talk about it. But you had the 14th pick, and we know pitching gets pushed up big time. There was five starting pitchers taken before you. DeGrom went 11 overall, but you got your guy at your first pick, Ozzie Albies. And what is it? I'm a huge Albies fan, so I get it. But what's your love for Ozzie Albies?
Yeah, I've always been on him. Was one of my highest owned players last year. I feel like he just gets a little bit brushed under the rug a little bit. I mean, he's a first round, you know, I took him in the first round, and what is his ADP in main events? It's like 18 or 19, something like that. He's just a monster. I mean, outside of the shortened season when he didn't play very many games, like 156, 160, 158. Last year he went 30-20. He's still 25, efficient on the base paths, like in a monster lineup. I really, really love the Braves lineup. We'll get to that in a second, because one of my strategies choosing, I had the KDS settings 12, 13, 14. I really wanted to start Ozzie Albies and Ronald Acuna, two Braves. Listen, I get people that are risk averse and worried about Acuna coming back, but man, I think they're being overly cautious, purposely overly cautious with him. I think he's going to be good. And, you know, I know you play a little bit of DFS as well, which is kind of, you know, I played that even before I really got involved in season long. There's a big advantage in correlating your lineups in DFS. Now, I don't think it's the same thing in fantasy or to the same degree, but I still think it matters. You look at last year, teams that crushed had a lot of Blue Jays on their lineups, and the Braves as well, right? That they came through. But one thing when I was trying to figure out, you know, what are my first three, four, five picks be ideally? What pick do I want to pick from? You try to plan out, if everything broke my way, who would I get in those top four picks? And I thought some of the best values were Albies, kind of at that first round turn. Acuna, who, I mean, he's the number one overall player potentially, right? If he comes back, and is obviously you got to find a replacement for 2 or 3 weeks, but I don't think that's a big deal. And I think he's going to be back and hitting. And obviously he's my second pick, which should be clear by now, probably. And then I really liked Matt Olson, who I think is just going to smash in Atlanta, right? I mean, what a massive park upgrade going from that dump in Oakland with all the fall territory, no fans. And then you go to Atlanta, they just won a World Series, a lot of pressure, but also another guy that's just healthy. The park could not fit him better, that short right field porch in Atlanta. And I just think this offense is going to crush. So I guess spoiler alert, but yeah, I followed up Albies with Acuna at pick 17. And that was an interesting choice because I knew I wanted those two, and it was a hard choice which to choose first, right? To give yourself the best chance to get the other one on the way back. And my thought was, there's so many outfielders there that if you take Albies first, then one of, I think, Trout, who are the other guys there?
Robert, maybe? Betts.
Yes. Yeah, so I knew I could just get one of those guys if Acuna went at 15 or 16, but Albies is not wasn't really replaceable for me in that range. So I ended up going Albies at 14 and then Acuna at 17.
And that's a great point you make there. A couple things, like you mentioned, I think it was Casey Cha was like, team, let's just stack the Jays last year. And if we go back and look at like the Razzball Player Rater or whatever you want to use, I think there was like 5 or 6 Jays in the top 10 last year. It was crazy. And the Braves could easily do that in that division, in that ballpark. I wrote an article on Olson going to Atlanta and I was blown away. It was obvious, like Oco to Atlanta, but then you just like really look at the changes he made at the dish last year and how it could be potentially like actually doable at first, like just to the naked eye. I'm like, oh, there's no way he can keep that strikeout rate and all that stuff. But the changes he made actually made sense.
He just drastically reduced his strikeout rate, which was backed by the chase rates out of the zone, everything, right? It just looks like a massive change that he made. I would expect it to stick, honestly, this year.
He's young. He made the adjustments. So
absolutely. Like, he's clearly got more raw power than Freddie. I love Freddie Freeman, too. But, like, I won't be at all surprised if Olson hits 45, 50 home runs. I think it's possible.
It's very possible.
Yeah, so I just love that Braves offense. There'll be a couple more on the way as we go through the draft.
And I love what you mentioned with the Albies thing, because one thing I like to talk about, there's so many different ways to draft. Everyone's got their philosophy. But it's like you mentioned, because you look at Albies' ADP, he's around 18, like you said. But if you miss on Albies, who's your next guy? Witt or something like that? That's a big difference from what
he's
you're trying
gonna
to build.
He's not going to be there at pick 45 anyway. So
yeah, exactly. So what you're trying to build is a big difference. So going with Albies over Acuna makes sense, because there's no problem going to Lubov or Trout or Betts.
Those guys are so close between those guys. I didn't really have that stronger preference. I did want the correlation with the two. So Acuna was my top option on the board. But there's not that much of a difference between drafting Acuna and Bet. I mean, there could be in the end, but right now, they're pretty similar picks, obviously.
Yeah, I like that quite a bit. Yeah, Trout fell to I won't say his name, who took Tucker, and he went three outfielders right out the gate, so that was pretty impressive.
By the way, that guy, we don't need to name him maybe, but I've never seen someone like spam the contact administrator button. We paused the draft like two or three times in the first three rounds because he just was adamant that he got auto-drafted Trout. And at like pick, what was that, pick like 19 or 20?
Yeah.
And it was just, and the administrator is like, no, we can't. He hit the contact administrator like five picks after he got auto-drafted Trout. It's like, we can't scale back five picks in the second round of a main event. But he just like wouldn't let it up, so there was a delay with that. And eventually, I just typed in chat. I'm like, "Dude, chill. Your start is Kyle Tucker and Mike Trout. Like, it's gonna be all right.
Not too bad. No. Before your next pick in round three, we saw five closers jump off the board. Obviously, when we keep going in your picks here, you're not a closer. You're not a pitcher early guy for the most part.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on all this? Closer runs that we've been seeing that just haven't changed. We thought maybe DCs, it made sense because there's no fab period, but it has not changed one bit. Sure, there's an overall, so you kind of want to lock in guys that are locked in, but that's still pretty aggressive. Five guys before your pick in round three.
I certainly understand why they're going as high as they are. I mean, what is there, 10 to 12 closers that you feel both good about their role and their skill to start off the year? So I certainly understand why these guys are pushed up so high. But from my perspective, you limit your team's upside a little bit by taking closers that early, just because there's more likely you have a higher chance of finding a closer in FAB or deeper in the draft that is a number one or two or three closer, right? You're pretty unlikely to find like a top three round hitter off of waivers in the main events. Just every player with reasonable playing time is on a roster and all the prospects are drafted, but closers, I mean, their roles change all the time. And every year there's closers that emerge that aren't drafted in a main event that do become a top five closer from the point when they get the job till the end of the season. And if you spend so much draft capital on a great closer or even two great closers, you sort of cut yourself off a little bit from the highest value fab picks out there. And you can also make the argument. I see people making it. I do get it where it's like, oh, I don't want to worry about that. Yeah. But if you hit on one of those guys with fab dollars early and you someone else spent a second round pick, like I got Ronald Acuna and you have Liam Hendricks, but then later on I'm able to fab a top closer. And yes, I understand the argument that it's maybe unlikely, but it's still more likely than finding a Ronald Acuna on FAB from a hitter perspective, right? At least it's 100%. Possible. So that's why, I mean, I don't have a problem with the picks, but I'm happy with my relief corps. That'll be you have to be willing to accept that challenge, to try to find those guys on the waiver wire, but it's just, at least it's possible compared to trying to find a hitter of that caliber,
especially in a 15 team league like this. You had your game plan. You have to know, okay, this is where I'm gonna have to go attack things on FAB if I can execute. Yep. And what you executed, you mentioned you had Matt Olson in round three, and then you wrapped it around with Bobby Witt Jr. with your fourth round pick, second pick in round four, and that's your shot you called when you're DMing me. Albies, Acuna, Olson, Witt was the start you wanted, and that's an amazing start. The odds of probably pulling that off in a 15 team league are slim to none, but you did it. So what Witt's been coming up the board, looks like he's going to start, potentially could get third base as well.
Yeah.
It looks like. So what is it with Witt that you like so much?
I mean, everything. I think I'll be really, really surprised if he's not in the opening day lineup at third base. They're going to keep him on to see a shortstop. Nicky Lopez moving over to second base. Whit Merrifield will go to the outfield. And so that's one of the reasons that I like Bobby Witt, is that he's going to get that third base eligibility, assuming – I mean, if Mondesi went down, Witt would become the starting shortstop, so then he might not get it. But in all likelihood, he's going to get that. So have that third base shortstop eligibility, which is really nice, because then you also get the middle infield corner, right? So you can kind of move him around. So all those reasons. But the biggest thing is it's hard for me not to believe in the talent. Last year in 124 games, he had 33 home runs and 29 steals in, you know, what is that, three-fourths of a season roughly. You know, raving reviews. The strikeouts have come down. He's been young for his age. And crushing balls this spring, right? You're not concerned about, like, the raw power. The exit velocity is clearly there for him. You just see those two spring home runs that are, like, you know, blasted pitcher hangs a slider and, like, hangs his head and doesn't even look at where it goes because Witt has that much power. So, and we know the Royals are going to run, right? I mean, look at this team. Whit Merrifield led the league last year with 40 stolen bases. We know what Mondesi can do. Like, they're going to run wild on the base paths. Bobby Witt is, to me, it's kind of a gut call, but he strikes me as a guy that if things go his way, he's going to play like 160 games, right? He's not coming out of the lineup and he's going to crush. He's got the power. He's going to run. No question about it. He's going to run. And I just see a potential first round player that you get in the fourth round. So he, you know, I jumped ADP on him. I would have had to wait. Actually, in this draft, I think potentially he maybe would have fallen to me because a lot of players did. His ADP coming in the main events was right around 70. My next pick was 74. And he's been climbing up,
playing with fire.
Yeah, and I really, really wanted him. So, yeah, you know, it's also – I DM'd you the first four picks that I wanted. I'm not going to pull off the plan on the fourth pick when he's sitting there. So I was happy to get him, even though – obviously well above ADP with Bobby Witt.
Yeah, and it's fine to go get him because, like you said, in reality, when you're picking at the ends, you have to go get your guys. That's just how it works. At pick 74, he may have fallen, but there's a good chance he doesn't. That's just the way it works. Like, I'd have arguments to take him over a lot of guys. I'd take him over Francisco Lindor, who you did. Yeah. But there's a lot of guys like that. A couple other picks I wanted to bring up before we get back to your next pick. We saw Chris Bryant back at pick 56, so he's still making that climb. Justin Verlander went at pick 57, so he's moving on up as people see that velocity looking good. But the one I wanted to ask you, actually, that'll be after your next pick, so we'll go there. But Verlander bump was pretty impressive to me because that's just been a guy on the move. But your next pick in round five, we've seen Sal Perez go in round three, JTR go late round four. So coming around round five, you went with Will Smith, the third catcher off the board. Are you usually a catcher first guy? And how do you compare Smith to Salvi and JTR?
Yeah. So I sent you my kind of draft sheet where I was targeting players at each round, guys I was hoping to get. And as we go through this, it's almost all guys that were on the list. Will Smith wasn't on that list. He did fall a few picks. That list was based, you know, on what I thought the value was based on ADP. A couple of pitchers that I would have chosen here weren't available. I'm a fan of Will Smith. I think the DH in the National League is going to help him. He's obviously in the best lineup in the league with the Dodgers, and, you know, just a good hitter. And part of the reason I went with him is I don't love a lot of catchers, to be honest, right? There's just not very many guys that I wanted. There wasn't a guy kind of at the top of my list here that I was dying to get, so Will Smith was just kind of sitting there, and sometimes the value falls to him, right? Like the first four picks I had purposely planned out, and then Will Smith, I needed to fill the catcher position. Don't like a ton of the guys late. It's kind of a relatively boring pick, but one that I'm happy with for sure.
No, that's one philosophy I do quite a bit, is I try to get at least one of the top guys. Sometimes I don't double tap. Like in the next couple of rounds, I'll make sure I get kind of two of the top 10 or 12 and just be like, okay, my catcher's position is locked in. We'll figure the rest out later. But you definitely got Will Smith, and I got no problem with that at all.
Yeah, guy on the turn took Wander Franco and Joe Musgrove, who were both – those were the three guys I was debating right there. So he snapped both up.
Are you a believer in Franco this year? Because I just haven't seen this power or the speed yet to make me feel confident.
Yeah, I'm on the fence. I don't actually haven't ended up with him very often, but, man, I do get the argument for him where – his number one overall prospect gets called up, hits well. He's another guy where, you know, assuming he doesn't get hurt, he's going to play like 160 games and just rack up plate appearances and counting stats. Kind of like you could see a Ozzy Albies type season. I don't think he's going to run that much and maybe not have that much power, but the hit tool is just so elite that he's going to put up a good season. So I don't have a problem with the pick, but I just shoot for upside. Yeah. I try to almost every spot I get.
Yeah, and this is where we go back to Atlanta with your sixth-round pick. Your first pitcher off the board is Charlie Morton, and I'm a big fan of Charlie Morton, and I'm glad you are too, because people just look at him. He's kind of the boring old guy, and, you know, all he does is throw innings and get tons of strikeouts and get you good ratios. Like, he definitely deserves to be a fantasy ace, and he goes much later than most fantasy aces.
Yeah, it's kind of like I'm in on Charlie Morton, or have been like the last, it seems like, 3, 4, 5 years. I mean, what more do you want? He just does it every year. The spring start he had, I think he's only had one, but there was some concern coming off the fractured leg, broke his leg in the playoffs, right? And then got a slow start to spring, but threw three innings and struck out four guys, and I think three clean innings. Velocity was there. And, you know, I for my individual team, I get the added bonus of just being in on the Braves, right? Like, if I'm right about this team's crushing Acuna, Albies, and Olson, Charlie Morton's doing his thing, he could win, you know, 17, 18 games. Like, it's, it seems, I'm sure some people are listening, maybe kind of scoffing at the correlation thing, but I think it's a real thing. So at this point, you know, being on the Braves, if I liked you anyway, it was kind of a tiebreaker for me. So that was kind of the case with Charlie Morton here.
And soon enough, we'll return to Atlanta. But yeah. We will go through some more picks here first. And we saw more closers flying off the board in round six. But the one I wanted to ask you about, it's not as in front of ADP as I thought, but I've heard some interesting debates of late. Brian Reynolds, he could get traded. He could not. Good batting average. Should have some pop. Not really any steals. You want to pick 89. Are you in or out on a guy like Brian Reynolds this year?
Again, another guy I don't have a ton of myself, but I do. I'm a believer in what he brings to the table, right? I think he's going to have a good season. So I totally get the pick. He's, you know, not on my list, but certainly a guy that if he falls, happy to scoop up the value past ADP. But you worry about that lineup in the park and just the upside, but I do think he's going to have a strong year.
Yeah, I was just kind of surprised because like four picks later, JD Martinez went, and I think I'd rather take my chances with JD, but maybe I'm
– I was looking at those two. That was going to be a tough call for me. I have them ranked right next to each other. I think I would go – I would have gone with Reynolds, just a younger player. Feels a little bit safer to me, but yeah, both guys I think are decent picks here.
All right, round seven, you got your SP2 before we say, well, you got Blake Snell as your SP2. Yasmani Grandal went right before him. Not sure you go another catcher already, but Blake Snell, what's your thoughts there? Because we saw the second half, the strikeouts were outstanding.
Yeah, hard to know what to expect from him for sure. The second half breakout, or not breakout, but bounce back, I guess, probably more accurate. I mean, he's all over the place. I've never been a huge Blake Snell guy, but what is he, 3 years removed from winning a Cy Young Award? And he's looks good this spring. He's talking about bringing back the changeup more. And then this is one where I didn't personally have like a super strong feeling about Snell. I think this might be the first share of him that I have. But, you know, I do trust and listen to other smart people around the industry, and a lot of people are very in on Blake Snell. This was, I think, 10 or 12 picks past his main event ADP. So sometimes you just say, yeah, you know, again, a situation where it seems like I'm scooping up value, even though not a guy that I'm, you know, flag planting on or anything like that. But a lot of smart people are on him. You can see why with the second half numbers and the pedigree that he has. I mean, he's a former Cy Young winner not too long ago. So I was happy to get him there. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up disappointing, but I think the upside is also very, very high for him.
Then at pick 115, right after your Blake Snell pick, with an ADP of 103, so someone quote-unquote got value, drafted Fernando Tatis Jr. This is a guy that I've pretty much crossed off now. Yeah. Were you tempted at all to grab him there?
Not there. I would have taken him if he fell maybe to the next, you know, I mean, that's another 30 picks. But no, I wasn't going to take him there. I will say Brill, that's his name there, pick team 15. He did snipe me a couple times later on in the draft. So he was probably the guy that kind of got me the most. But yeah, I don't know, especially at this point for me where I kind of got all the guys that I wanted. Mm-hmm. You're not going to throw, this is my perspective at least, I don't want to throw like a immediate monkey wrench into the team that I already love so much for no reason, right? Sure. To spend the, like if things hadn't gone my way and you're kind of worried about your upside or something like that, then maybe. But like I'm already gambling a little bit on Acuna's health, on Witt producing as a rookie, Blake Snell, you know, so yeah, it was easy to pass on Tatis for me at this point.
All right, kicking off round eight, Mark Melanson, another closer off the board. Then you went with your first closer in Scott Barlow. Were you wanting Melanson, or was Barlow your target right here the whole time? Yeah,
I actually had Barlow ahead of the closers that go around this pick 100. So that's Trinan, Taylor Rogers.
Trinan went a couple rounds earlier today.
Yeah, he did. And I thought I might actually ended up getting him at like pick 130, you know, based on the news. But again, a little bit of a soft draft, I thought. But anyway, Trinan goes early. Taylor Rogers goes earlier than this. I think Barlow, I mean, I'll be surprised if he's not trotting out there for the first, you know, save opportunity for the Royals, honestly. Pitched really well last year. They didn't bring anybody in. He finished with the job. He's healthy this spring. Good pitcher. Grades out really well by the metrics that I look at. So yeah, I was happy to get him there. I think that's maybe 10 picks above ADP, but I needed a closer. He was the last of the tier for me. He's actually kind of the front of that tier, but the last member of that tier left. So that was a relatively easy pick too. The only thing I was debating there at that near turn was to go with Barlow first or Snell first. I wasn't quite sure, but I was happy to end up getting both.
And things just keep falling your way then. That's perfect. Yeah. Reese Hoskins went later in round eight, and he's a big target of mine if I don't get an early first baseman. So I'm a fan of that pick for sure. Eduardo Rodriguez wrapped up round eight, and we headed into round nine, and you see some of the first basemen that usually go around this time in Bell and Crone. We had Franmil Reyes off the board, and we head back to your pick in another Atlanta Brave, and I love Dansby Swanson. What's your thoughts on Dansby Swanson? Because the only thing that you see everywhere now is he's batting low in the lineup. That's going to hurt him.
Don't get me started on the lineup.
And he went, and Med Rosario went before him, which shocks me.
I mean, what Swanson, what did he do last year? Like 27 home runs.
You don't have to convince me, trust me.
And nine steals, and like is in this monster lineup, plays every day, right? Because he's a fantastic defensive shortstop. He's still young. And I get he's in the, you know, I pay attention. I look at the spring training lineups every day. I get he's hitting eighth or ninth a lot of days. He also let off today, I believe. And I mean, we've seen it for years with Swanson. He's all over the place in the lineup. I do think that the lineup position stuff, it's important. Of course, it's important what position you hit in the lineup. But where you're hitting at to begin the year, it can just move so quickly. It just one injury and it just completely goes, you know, can switch. If you're producing, you're going to likely move up the lineup. And then also the addition of the NLDH, where there's not hitting eighth in the NL. If I thought a player was going to hit eighth, even a catcher, I wouldn't want to take him, right? You don't want to hit in front of the pitcher. It's different now, right? Especially for a Braves lineup whose worst hitters are Dansby Swanson and Travis d'Arnaud, who's a pretty good hitting catcher. So even if he's down there, it's kind of like the loss of plate appearances from hitting that low in the lineup for a player like him are kind of mitigated because he plays every single day.
He's a teenager.
In a good lineup. So I was happy to get him, another guy that I did get below their main event ADP. Obviously, you know, happy to add a fourth Braves hitter to the squad. So I was happy with that pick.
Yeah, sure. Quite the wraparound stack going right now.
Yeah,
with your squad. So you got that going for you. And then we head around round 10 where it gets real fun now. At 10.2, second pick in round 10, you grabbed your third starting pitcher off the board in Clayton Kershaw, who we know is banged up. He's looked good this spring. You know, it's like the old theory, can I get 140 innings out of him? I'll be happy. So what do you think about Kershaw?
Yeah, this is one of my problems, not to go on a rant, but when you're trying to look at ranked players based on projections, if Kershaw was like hurt now, right, and they're saying, oh, he's going to be ready by May, no chance I take him here. But he's going to be in the rotation to start the year, right? And so I'll worry about August and September. Like, a lot's going to happen in a baseball season in the next 4 or 5 months. Give me healthy Kershaw right now, ready to go, can go right in my rotation. And listen, he's not the same pitcher he used to be, but he is damn effective still when he's in the rotation, when he's healthy. He's going to be to start the year, and you can expect good stuff out of him, right? Like, he's going to be good to start the year. He's going to be a guy you're happy to have in your lineup, most likely. Do I expect him to throw even 150 innings? No. I think there's a decent chance I'll drop him at some point in the year if he goes down. But I'm happy to have him to start the year, and who knows how long he can last. Just seems like a safe pick with some upside if health somehow just really breaks his way. You never know.
Yeah, he was a big part of some of my teams last year, and I ended up dropping him too, and that's fine. But yep. He gets the job done until you get there. And pitching, you can always find on the waiver wire more mm-hmm. often than not as the season goes on.
Yep.
Later this round, Andrew Kittredge went at pick 143. Yep. He had an ADP of 175. So the Pete Fairbanks news is creating some rise in that ADP.
Yeah.
Max Muncy was your pick, was pick 150, which is an interesting pick because you either all in or all out on that injury with Max Muncy. But we come back to round 11 now, and this is where the fun begins. pick 164. This gentleman had an ADP entering tonight of 242. So you jumped him about 80 spots, and I'm not disagreeing with the jump with what we've seen recently, but you went with Julio Rodriguez as your second outfielder.
Yeah. He was a big target for me. Man. If you just look at what he produced in the minor leagues.
Did you see the home run he hit on Wednesday?
Yeah, he is. I tweeted the other day. I've been tweeting about Julio Rodriguez actually for a month now that I think he's going to start up on the team. I've been drafting him everywhere. He's been obviously climbing up draft boards. Now I think he's obviously a big favorite right now. I think the break camp with the Mariners, from everything we know, massive numbers at every level that he's gone to, number one or number two prospect next to Witt, depending on where you look. Mariners are going to want to win. This guy is just electric, right? Massive power, speed. I think he's going to be their opening day center fielder. And another guy where, I mean, call me crazy if you want, but I think the upside for him is 30-30, right?
Yep. Clear. Well, you're going for the overall. So this is an overall pick. Like, this is totally 100% an overall pick. Yeah. This is a $2,400 outfielder in DFS going, okay, we're trying to break the bank here. I 100% understand what you're doing here.
But I think he's going to be a 5K outfielder.
Well, he will be eventually, yeah. But this is the guy that, like, I don't even know if DK pricing's out yet. It's got to be. But I guarantee you he's, like, too cheap on day one. But by, like, week two when they figure their stuff out, he'll be, like, 5K.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's going to crush. This is another one. It's like, oh, he's batting seventh in the lineup every day. Well, yeah, he's 21 years old and he's not proven. I mean, how long is he going to bat in seventh he was the best hitter at both AA and AAA when he got moved up. He's got speed.
He'll quickly move up that order, like you said.
He could absolutely fall flat on his face and be back in the minors. You know, it could be a Jared Kelenic, same team situation. But I think Rodriguez is another level above the prospect that a Jared Kelenic was. Mm-hmm. I expect big things. We'll see.
And we head back to Atlanta with your round 12 pick. Well, one Brave went before that. Marcell Ozuna went to Brill. And then you went with Eddie Rosario. Were you looking at Ozuna, or did you want Rosario the whole time?
They were both on the list. I think I would have gone Ozuna over Rosario, but it was going to be a close call. I liked what I saw from Rosario in Atlanta. I'm a longtime Twins fan. Used to have a Twins season ticket, so I watched a lot of Eddie Rosario. He does strike me as someone who just performs better kind of like on a good team, like in a pennant race with a crowd behind him. Remember last year he started in Cleveland and just wasn't doing much for kind of a dead team. He goes to Atlanta. They let him run. He ends up with a bunch of steals. He's been hitting leadoff against righties. I think he's going to lead off team, at least to start the year against right-handed pitchers. And then another thing I like about Rosario, both Rosario and kind of the Atlanta themed lineup that I have, they don't have a lot behind the starters. Like, right now, obviously Acuna's hopefully coming back in a couple of weeks, but like Alex Dickerson is listed as their DH. Like, I think this, and you know, I'm a Braves fan as well. And they just run out their guys every day. You know what I mean? It's like, even like guys like Austin Riley, Swanson, Albies, now it's going to be Matt Olson instead of Freeman, Rosario, even Adam Duvall, I think is going to be just out there every single day in center field. I don't think Rosario is going to get platooned. Some power, speed, batting average, and obviously fits my kind of lineup field well. So I was happy to get him there.
Yeah, no, I like it quite a bit, especially the part you mentioned that he runs, which is a big part of these later outfield options you're going to grab there. Which you already have plenty of steals, but it's always
a perk. Always need more steals, Bubba.
Always do. No, you can never have enough. That is true. Like, because after you took Eddie, like Avisaíl García is another guy who'll get you some steals. Robbie Grossman, the 2020 last year, he'll get you some steals. But Eddie Rosario on that team to complete your stack is a very intriguing way to go about things. Heading to round 13, some of the usual suspects go off the board. Joe Adell went to pick 11 in round 13. I'm a big Adell fan this year, but you went with a guy that I've been drafting in a lot of places. Nelson Cruz with your 13th round pick. Was he a target of yours going into this, or is this kind of a guy that fell in your lap?
I'd say a little bit of both. I take a lot. I'm big on the rookie hitters this year, and so there's some risk there. So filling up your utility spot for me was a little bit something I didn't love to do. But this is Cruz well past his ADP, main event ADP at this point. He got traded from the Twins to the Rays last year, and then he wasn't horrible, but wasn't, you know, quote unquote Nelson Cruz down the stretch. We've seen him with other hitters. I think that's just a really, really tough place to hit. In Tampa, and I kind of give him a little bit of a pass for that. I know he's, you know, ancient by baseball players' terms, but when he was with the Twins, he was still pretty much the same guy, and I kind of like that Nationals lineup. Listen, hitting behind Juan Soto, who's just constantly on base, Josh Bell can hit, and then, you know, even like Keibert Ruiz and Lane Thomas, I think they can do some damage there, but hitting behind Juan Soto doesn't get much better than that. Obviously National League DH now. So even when there's like the interleague stuff and he was on the American League team, you'd have to sit out those games. I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked if Cruz just is Nelson Cruz again and hits 35 to 40 home runs with a 270 average and tons of RBIs hitting behind Juan Soto. So what is this, like pick 180 or 190 or something?
Yeah, his ADP was like 166.
Yeah. So it was hard for me to pass on him here, even though obviously my team is more weighted to hitting still at this point, but I just couldn't, just a huge bat, you know, another one. Yeah. I just had to take it.
Yeah. There's a lot to be said about that Tampa Bay thing that you mentioned. Cause when you dig in on his numbers between Minnesota and Tampa last year, the power was still kind of there, but the strikeout rate was tremendously different in Tampa Bay. And that's something that's not Nelson Cruz-esque. And Willy Adames has mentioned the batter's eye as well as an issue. And we saw how well that changed when he left town. So that is quite intriguing. Right before Nelson Cruz was Jonathan Villar, who's climbing up boards everywhere. So that's something for people to monitor. If you are into VR, be ready to draft VR earlier. Yeah. Jared Kelenic went right after Cruz. He went Votto. And then your next pick in round 14 was Matt Chapman, another guy whose ADP was around 166 heading into this draft. He fell quite a bit. So that's not a bad third base option in round 14.
And these are guys that really shouldn't be falling past their ADPs, no. Right?
These are big bats.
Nelson Cruz like locked into like the cleanup spot, like every day playing time. And I mean, maybe not the cleanup spot for Matt Chapman, but like he's instantly in the best or, you know, best or second best lineup in baseball, I think, in Toronto, you know, depending on where you rank the Dodgers. He had that hip surgery, right? I think after the 2020 season, and then last year played a lot, but the strikeout rate was way up. Just kind of struggled in general. I mean, he said himself he just wasn't feeling 100%, but still played, you know, pretty young. And then another player that's just, you move from that this horrible ballpark in Oakland, but, you know, bad lineup, bad place to hit, to Toronto, to the AL East. And I don't know, it's not hard for me to envision Matt Chapman with just a massive bounce back season where he hits 35, 40 bombs. I didn't have a third baseman at this point. I do have Bobby Witt, who should get that eligibility, but I did need someone to hold it over at least for the, you know, first 20 games or so. So yeah, I love getting Matt Chapman here.
Yeah, that's a great value. Anytime you can get these guys falling into your laps, it's pretty solid.
I did have to choose between Matt Chapman and Josh Donaldson, who I also really like.
I'm a huge Josh Donaldson fan this
year. Yeah, it was a tough call.
You might have went with the right guy because Josh Donaldson might be getting his butt kicked here pretty soon from the reports today. He was throwing speakers in the locker room and left because he had like the attitude. So that's not a good start to things, but
he's much older. I felt better about Chapman putting together a full season than Donaldson.
Yeah, Donaldson went later in round 14, so that makes sense. Into round 15, Lizardo went first off in 15. Yeah. So and Grichuk at the turn there, those are two guys that are getting bumped up quite a bit with their Grichuk in Colorado, Lizardo with this amazing spring he's having. And as you go farther back into round 15, I did think it was interesting that team 12 here in round 14 took Rowan Wick, who it sounds like is not going to be the closer now. And then they took in round 15 Robert Suarez, who may be the closer in San Diego. So those are two spec closers pretty early in drafts in my mind. So that was interesting. Interesting way to build. He also had Shane
Gannon. That's the guy who couldn't stop spamming the contact.
He took Shane Baz and Kopech. He's got a lot of interesting stuff going on there. But with your next pick in round 15 here, Alex Kirilloff, first base outfield eligible, brings some nice flexibility to your roster. He had the wrist injuries, but when he hits the ball, it's ridiculous. The hard contact skills, the power skills, he's supposed to be pretty healthy right now, and you just got to roll with that. He's young. I love Kirilloff this year, and it seems like this could be a nice value if things pan out properly.
I think so. Yeah, healthy now. If you look at his numbers from last year, they're not bad, but he started off really, really hot. Was getting super unlucky just with the you know, line drives all over the place, getting caught. And then he hurt his wrist and played through it. Like half his stats are playing through a wrist injury, which he has had in the past. It's a concern with Kirilloff, no question about it. But like, if you look at the numbers overall, they're really influenced by playing through an injury very, very clearly. We've seen this with it's a number of players every year where their stats fall off, but for a reason, right? I mean, I think Chapman is a good example of that. We've seen it with Jose Altuve where he's playing through something, but then kind of bounces back. I think this could be that type of a situation for Kirilloff. Still very young, all the skill in the world, sprays the ball to all fields, good contact skills, great power. And I did need another kind of everyday outfielder at this point because, listen, we're still not 100% sure on Julio Rodriguez. And I can't ever drop him, right?
You're never dropping him now.
Can't drop him. We still don't know for sure when Ronald Acuna will be back. So I did have to, you know, I knew I had to probably take 7 outfield eligible players on my final roster. Kirilloff's going to be in that lineup every day to start the year. And you can also play first base. That first base outfield is a unique eligibility that not many players have. I was happy to get him here.
And with your round 17 pick, another guy that dropped almost 30 picks in ADP, Alex Cobb, who I think makes a really solid SP4 for you going to San Francisco now. Yeah. We saw the improvements in Anaheim last year, and we saw what that team can do with a guy with a split-finger fastball. So it's got to be a lot to like with Cobb going into that ballpark on that rotation.
I mean, listen, if you can pitch well for the Angels, you can be an ace on the Giants, right?
Definitely.
There's not much more to say beyond that. I mean, you look good last year, and if the Giants want you, then I want you on my fantasy roster as a pitcher. So,
no doubt about it. As we wrap back to 17 and 18, because I don't need to name all these guys that are going off with your usual suspects, Craig Kimbrel did go in round 17, so people are still believing in that train. But you said you need more outfielders, and you started to approach that subject again. Lane Thomas, who you mentioned earlier, should be hitting towards the top of that, potentially towards the top of that Washington lineup, and should play pretty much every day. So you got him around 17.
Yeah, I think he's going to be out there every day for Washington. If you've been following spring training lineups, he's pretty much hitting sixth every time he's in there. Again, behind some pretty strong hitters in front of him. Good defensively, some power, some speed. Again, not the most exciting pick in the world, but I needed someone that I was pretty sure was just going to be out there playing every day. And you know, can a reasonable chance of producing. I like him anyway, but the fact that I just feel so good about his playing time early on was kind of what led me in that direction here.
And then you wrapped it around with another youngster, another outfielder, but a guy we expect to start the year with the Tigers. But still, like you said with Julio, we shall see. But Riley Green, another just stud prospect. You went and grabbed him at round 18, and this could, like, you could have one really, really fun team if all things pan out properly.
Yeah. I mean, that's the goal. I mean, another high-end prospect with power, with speed. I mean, I think he's going to break camp. We're running out of days here, Bubba, for them to send these guys down, you know?
Yeah, because we've seen other teams already send, like, you know, the Twins that sent Larnach down the other day, so it's happening.
The Royals sent Prado and Melendez down, who had a chance to make it. So it's like the guys that are left at this point, I mean, it's in the next day or two, you know, and I think it seems like the Tigers are going to keep them up. I mean, I bet you saw the quotes from the Tigers general manager. It's like, we want these guys to make the roster, which I saw.
You see what Miggy said?
Yeah. I mean, I think they'll be up, and great talent, no question about it. Producing in the spring, everyday center field job, it looks like to me, for Riley Green. So we'll see, but. I mean, it seems like a great shot to take a shot on him here.
Yeah, don't blame you one bit on that one. So we head into round 19 and 20 now, and you grab another starting pitcher in Josiah Gray, who, when we saw him go over Washington last year, strikeouts were outstanding. Home runs were an issue, but he's young. We'll hope that continues to develop. But the one thing I love to see besides the strikeouts is even for a young pitcher, they just let him throw. They let him get his innings, and that is tremendous to me. So you went and grabbed Gray in round 19. What's your expectations on him?
Yeah, again, the strikeout stuff is there. The swing and miss is there. I like his pitch mix. I like his minor league results. And he, along with Keibert Ruiz, was a big return for Trey Turner and Max Scherzer. The Nationals are kind of a little bit of an old school organization, right? And I think, listen, he's in the rotation. And I think they'll let him go 6-plus innings if he's pitching well. I don't think they're really going to baby him. I like the skills. You know, remains to be seen how he performs. Obviously, the surface stats last year weren't great, but he'll get every chance to get the job done, and I think there's some upside there as well.
Right after Josiah Gray was Hunter Green, who was announced to be the fifth starter for the Reds. Were you interested in Hunter Green? Was that a snipe?
Yes, that was absolutely a snipe. Yep. Hunter Green would have been on my roster on my next pick, and which made me obviously regret going Josiah over Hunter Green. But this is, I mean, that's like 160 picks above ADP or something crazy like that for Hunter Green. So I thought I could maybe get away with it. But like I said, that guy on the 15-16 turn got me a couple times. This was one of them.
Yeah, his ADP was 374 coming into this one. So definitely a massive rise in ADP. But you ended up with Devin Williams. You only have Scott Barlow so far as your closer. Williams obviously isn't the closer, but could be the closer. At worst, gets you solid innings. What was your thought process with Williams?
Yeah, he was, according to my metrics, like the most effective reliever in 2020. Remember last year, I was a proponent of drafting him kind of early, just kind of for that reason, just because he's just so good. But he was kind of hurt coming into the start of the year last year, and he got up to a slow start. But if you look at his numbers down the last 3-4 months, he was just an absolute monster. I think, you know, if I had to pick one reliever to get three outs, he would probably be the guy. And I mean, what, he's a Josh Hader injury or trade away from
being an elite closer,
from being a second round pick. I mean, if he had the job, which he will, if something happens to Hader, he would be a second round pick. At worst, a third round pick with all his skills, great team to pitch for. And I don't like him as much in 12 team leagues because of the waiver wire, there's more pitchers to choose from. But in a 15 teamer, I have no problem running Devin Williams out there for a week if I can't find a starter that I'm comfortable with. He's going to get, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I'm sure he had like 6 wins and 8 saves or something, you know, just because he's going to pitch in all high leverage situations. Anytime Hader needs a break, he'll be the guy in for the save. He's going to be super effective, keep those ratios intact. So again, I would have taken Hunter Green here, but Devin Williams is just a glue guy to have, especially for me who went kind of a lot of early, you know, hitting heavy, to be able to just plug him in there while I try to figure out maybe the back end of my staff.
And that's a great point in a 15 team league because he can get you the ratios, the strikeouts, and sneak out some wins possibly in saves, which is great because the player pool is so much deeper there. You won't always have, you know, five starters you want to roll out there or something. Yeah. So that is a good use. If they have a good 7-game week coming up, he could fit that mold. Right after Williams, though, David Bednar closing for Pittsburgh, at least part-time. You have Sulcer and, well, Steckenrider, not really. But you saw back-to-back closers go off the board. Were they on the radar for you, or is it always Williams over those guys?
It's Williams over those guys for me. I think most, you know, many fantasy drafters would disagree. People like the saves. Man, I don't know if I want half of the role in Pittsburgh.
12 saves, maybe?
Yeah. And for Bednar's fine, but he's a far inferior pitcher to Williams. And the bigger thing to me is just, we're getting to the range where a lot of these guys won't end up on your roster at rounds 20 and beyond. Williams will be awesome for me while he's on my team. And if something better comes along, great. But you also have the lottery ticket, like I said, with Williams, of him becoming a top asset and all of one of the top assets in fantasy baseball, frankly, if Hader goes down. So I prefer the upside. I think Williams has a much better shot to be a top 50 player than Bednar does. He'll need some things to break his way, but so would Bednar. So, I get both sides of that one, but I'll take the far superior skills and hope the role breaks his way.
Yeah, we saw actually Matt Brash going around 18 on their young arm that people are talking about quite a bit. We saw Reed Detmers.
He was on my list. I searched for him in like round 24. I didn't notice that he went, and I was like,
yeah, oh, I just noticed it now too. I was like, whoa, he jumped up quite a bit.
I do like him though.
Reed Detmers went in round 21. If he snuck back to you, him, Mitch Keller, any of those kind of big flashy spring arms, are those attracted you at all?
Yes. I think – so I ended up taking Josh Harrison, but I think I would have taken Keller, Carrasco, Detmers. All three of those guys that went in that round before I picked over Harrison. But when it got to me – so Harrison, it looks
Harrison like – Harrison fits your roster perfectly. Second base, third base, outfield, he's going to start every day.
That's exactly what I needed at this point. We talked about my uncertainty at outfield. I think it will work out, but you can't be sure in my – I spent so much draft capital on those rookies that I'll have to keep them and try to patch it together as much if I can. You know, it's possible things could go totally haywire and you would have to drop a Riley Green. But Harrison can fill in all over, right? Second, third, outfield, like you mentioned. Decent chance he starts in my lineup at outfield. I think he's going to play every day for the White Sox.
He announced a couple days ago he's going to be the starting second baseman.
And is Tony La Russa still managing there? I think he is, right?
When he wakes up with a bus and a .08, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, to me, like, Josh Harrison, just like a gamer type dude, right? He seems like exactly the type
Josh Harrison.
It seems exactly the type of guy like Tony La Russa is like, he ain't coming to the lineup. That's my second baseman, you know? Yep. So.
Yeah, no, he's phenomenal there. And, you know, Moncada's had some injury issues in the past, and Harrison will find his way in that lineup. I'm not too worried about that.
Luis Robert and Eloy have both been hurt, and Harrison can play in the outfield. I think he's going to be in the lineup almost every day.
All right, you have Will Smith already on your team. There's been a ton of catchers taken off the board. So coming around round 22, you went with Mike Zunino. We saw the power through the roof last year. We know the concerns with the batting average, but at this point, it's like Danny Jansen, Yadier Molina, James McCann. Your options are getting limited. So was Zunino a target of yours, or was it more like, hey, I got to get someone quicker, it's going to get ugly?
It wasn't a target. But this is like 30 or 40 picks, I think, past ADP, something like that. I needed a second catcher. I mean, what did he hit, like 35 home runs last year? I don't have like – this isn't my guy I think this is my first share of him. I don't really have that much more to add other than he's an everyday – pretty close to everyday catcher, fantastic defensively, and has big power. So, just kind of a boring pick, but should get the job done.
You needed it to fill out your roster, so that's the way it goes. Yep. Daniel Hudson fell to the middle of round 22, which kind of surprises me with the recent news and some of the other relievers we saw taken by certain people. Kyle Hendricks, how the mighty have fallen at the end of round 22. That's quite a shocker there. But we come back through round 23, and you went young again with Nick Lodello, who should be slotting to that rotation right around Green. What's your thoughts on that Lodello pick?
Yeah, the Reds announced – so they have Castillo and
– Minor,
on the IL to start the year. they said Santillan was going to be a reliever, yeah. And they don't really have anyone else to fill it.
It's ugly. It's ugly.
And they've been saying that these guys are ready, Lodolo and Green. They announced Green in the rotation today. We're recording mm-hmm. this late on Wednesday night. So Green is going to start that Sunday. They got a four-game week Thursday through Sunday. And then they didn't announce it, but I expect Lodolo to get the start on that Monday, be their fifth starter. Man, if you look at this guy's minor league stats, pounds of strike zone, a huge amount of strikeouts, and I don't know if you've seen him pitch in spring training, Bubba. He looks nasty from the left side. Like,
he's got a lot of Chris Sale in him.
Yes, that's exactly who I
lengthy of, lefty man. That kind of comes from an angle.
Big, tall lefty.
Randy Johnson, Chris Sale, got a lot of that.
I mean, I look at the, like I draft mostly by the numbers, and his minor league numbers. He's been on my radar all draft season, and then to see what he's doing in the spring, he just looks absolutely filthy. His pitches look amazing. Manager's talking him up. I heard some interviews with him. He says he's ready to go. Hopes to get the starting role. I think he will. He's another guy I expect to have success right out of the gate, honestly.
Yeah, I don't hate it. And if it doesn't pan out, it's round 23. So what's the big deal?
I went a different direction on my next pitcher pick.
Yeah, and this makes sense, though. For your roster construction, around 24, you went Zach Greinke. Boring veteran. What he's going to do is eat innings up for you. Hopefully doesn't crush your ratios, but he's going to be out there every fifth day, which is what you might need with some of these other young arms you have going on. So, and he's in a bad division. So I don't mind the Greinke pick. Where was your thought process there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one bad year last year where he wasn't even that bad. Of course, he could just fall off the planet at any point. But I don't know, back to Kansas City. I kind of like that. It's a big park to pitch in. The offense is in the division. You get some cake-ish matchups with the Guardians and the Tigers. Part of this pick, honestly, was just that he's going to be in the opening day rotation. He's going to start opening day against the Guardians. Like
it's a pretty good matchup.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and I don't know. I kind of expect him to go six innings and give up a couple runs and maybe get a win and get me off to a good start. We'll see how long he lasts on the roster. Could be one start, right? I mean, yep. I could see potentially dropping him that very Sunday, but I think for that, especially that opening week, I'll be happy to have him in the lineup. We'll see where it goes from there. Obviously, you know, on his last legs to some degree, but would you be shocked if he delivers an ERA kind of like a Wainwright season from last year, right? Where he just goes all year and, you know, kind of pulls it out of his ass and gives you usable stats. It wouldn't shock me at all. So,
no, again, that's where I am on him. I think he's like around a 4-ish ERA, which ain't going to crush you at this pick of the draft. And he's going to get you 6-plus innings in almost every start unless he just gets shelled, which is what it is. And he's going to probably make 30 starts. So it's not bad at all, especially in a 15-teamer. Like 12-team probably wouldn't do it. 15 makes tons of sense. I totally get it. In rounds 20, 25, and 26 here, I'm not going to name off everything because we're at the end of the draft where it's go get your stuff. But rounds 25 and 26, you went with a couple late targets that I like, and Edward Cabrera for the Marlins and Tucker Davidson for Atlanta. Two more pitchers, young arms. They might not be there to start the year. They might not be there the whole year, but they're going to have their chances, and they might start the year with them. Who knows? But what's your thoughts on Cabrera and Davidson?
Yeah, two guys that I do think are going to start the year in the rotation. Braves have that 4 and 5 spot still open. Davidson pitching well this spring, pitched pretty well down the stretch last year. I do think he's a pretty good bet to end up in that Braves starting five. I like the skills to some degree. So, again, I don't think Davidson really has the ability to become like an ace-level pitcher, but I think he's going to be usable to start the year. And I think I'll be happy to have him. Cabrera, I think, does have some real potential upside. Added a new sinker this year. If you look at his pitch mix from last year, I mean, he's throwing, you know, 97, 98 with a good breaking ball, has had just an electric arm. He honestly reminds me a lot of Sandy Alcantara, where pump and gas, needs to kind of figure it out. The strikeouts have kind of maybe lagged behind the actual stuff. But again, Sixto Sanchez down to start the year. I think they're going to need Cabrera. He looked good in his spring outing, his latest spring outing. So again, another guy that could easily end up being dropped, but I do think is worth a flyer early on.
Yeah, I'm with you on Cabrera especially. I think there's a lot to like there before he got called up last year. Big-time prospect destroying the minor leagues, just destroying it. And it's one of those deals he came up, had some control issues, long ball issues from time to time, and it never really panned out.
We see that with young talented pitchers like Corbin Burns even just a couple years ago. They come up and they just get rocked.
All those Royals pitchers, even Logan Gilbert's first few starts weren't great.
Yeah, yeah. And then you can turn it around quickly as a pitcher, though.
Yep, you get the right tutelage and stay close to Sandy, and he might be okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Around 27 and 28, a couple youngsters here, to Stephen Kwan of Cleveland and MJ Melendez of Kansas City. Kwan actually might start with the club this year.
I think so.
There's some hype there. Melendez, like you said, got sent down, but they sent him down and they're working him at third base in the outfield, which tells you they want him up as soon as possible. They just can't move Salvi out of the way.
Yeah, so Stephen Kwan, my first share of him, but it looks like he's going to win a starting role for the Guardians. Some speed, really good contact skills. Apparently he reworked his swing. I think I might have just found that out tonight, to be honest. But it's just another outfielder that I think is going to be in the starting lineup opening day. A young guy. We'll see. I don't really have that much more to add on Stephen Kwan. MJ Melendez, though, he is, I think, my highest owned player throughout draft season. So I was obviously hoping he would break camp with the club. He earned the right to do so, crushing it in spring for the Royals. This guy led all of minor league baseball in home runs last year, 41 home runs. He played in the same league as Wander Franco, who was like the third best hitter in AAA. But first was MJ Melendez. Had a big swing change, I guess, because we didn't have the 2020 data. So the 2019 numbers for him weren't great and wasn't really a top prospect. But just absolutely crushed at both minor league stops, Double A and Triple A in 2021. He had hit some massive couple, or at least one massive home run this spring. And you know, like you said, he can play backup catcher to Salvador Perez. Can DH. This team does get a little thin at the back end of the lineup. First base also is a big question mark for this team, with Carlos Santana seemingly on his way out or on his last legs. Like you mentioned, they're working him at third base, at outfield, where they're also a little weak. And then obviously can spell. He's supposedly a good defensive catcher. I mean, you could see him just splitting time with Salvador Perez, one DHs and the other catches. That's also a possibility. So I see a lot of paths for him to get in the lineup every day. Listen, I'm not a guy that's normally going to stash a catcher, especially on my bench, but I've just been so high on this guy all year long that, listen, I've had to cut him, right? If the injury bug strikes me early and he doesn't get a call early and I have to cut him, is what it is. But I think he is a very, very high upside lottery ticket.
Yeah, I don't blame you at all. The talent level is ridiculous with him. So as long as they're trying to find playing time for him, I'd be intrigued as well.
Yeah.
Right after Melendez's pick, Emilio Pagan went. For the listeners out there, he may be the actual closer in San Diego. So keep that in mind. If so,
I made a mistake on that one then.
Yeah, just because the latest mining the news, believe what you want to believe in that. They said Pagan and Suarez are the two favorites right now, but we'll see. There's a lot to be done still.
It could be like six guys, right?
So, exactly. There's a bunch back there. But that could be an interesting pick that could pan out pretty well at some point in time. Back to round 29 now. Before we get to your pick, I did want to mention C.J. Abrams went in the middle of round 29, and it looks like he may get a spot on the roster for the Padres. Was he interested? Were you interested in him at this round, or is he just kind of a no big deal for you?
I'll be honest. I don't know that much about C.J. Abrams, okay. So enlighten me, Bubba. Should I have been interested?
Well, he's just another big prospect. The way you like your young guys, I figured you might be interested in him. But there's an empty 40-man spot right now, and they sent other people down. And they're playing Abrams. They started him in center field today because it's only Grisham there. They're moving him all around. He was a shortstop. He can play everywhere. So
I'll be looking him up tomorrow. And if I'm any more drafts, he could join my rookie crew here.
The fact he's starting, he's around 29, intrigued me a little bit there. But you went with a couple of veterans to round things out, which works with your young roster. Robinson Cano should hit in the middle of the Mets lineup, DHing second base. And you went Miles Mikolas for those innings in St. Louis. So what'd you go with those last two guys?
I just want to see what Robinson Cano has. I mean, the last time we saw him with the Mets, he was good. Was it injury or suspension? I can't remember what.
PED suspension.
Yeah, took him out. Yeah, I mean, but he was hitting. And then last year, last year was the PED, right? So we'll see. I think decent chance that, you know, he just maybe doesn't have anything left in his old age. But just a guy that, I mean, they've got a DH in the National League now. It's an improved lineup. And the last that we saw him, he was hitting. Also say, this kind of goes with the Nelson Cruz, no PED testing during the lockout. So maybe these guys come out of the gate hot.
They're going to be healthy.
Yeah, we'll see.
And what about Mikolas?
Yeah, just a guy, I mean, just an innings guy that I think I can plug in there. We'll see how long he lasts or if he's effective. Not a super exciting pick, but just someone that could potentially be useful in those first couple weeks of the season.
All right. So looking back at the squad, we know you went hitting heavy early. You got some nice ace pitchers as well. A lot of youth to the squad. Saves is probably your biggest thing you're going to be approaching this year. What are your overall thoughts on the strengths and weaknesses of this team?
Yeah, honestly, for what I was planning to do, it really couldn't have gone much better. I got almost all the guys that I was kind of targeting at each round. Saves, I think, are going to be, a thing that I'm going to have to resolve. I'm going to have to find another closer at some point, no question about it. On the waiver wire, I feel, especially in this league, pretty good about my ability to do so. And then, you know, listen, if I'm just wrong about the rookies this year, it's possible that these rookies will do. We've seen it last year. They all kind of really struggled. I think that was kind of due to the missed 2020.
I would say it has a lot to do with that, yeah.
And then this crop of rookies just seems special to me. Bobby Witt and Julio Rodriguez and Riley Green, they seem like special players.
That could legit be the top three AL Rookie of the Year candidates.
Yeah, I think so too. I'll throw Spencer Torkelson. He looks like a special hitter. Adley Rutschman when he comes back. I really think this is going to be the year of the rookie hitter. I really believe that. Obviously my draft reflects that. So, but risky. And then, you know, my pitching staff obviously has a ton of risk overall as well. Charlie Morton is 39. Clayton Kershaw, who knows what we're going to get out of him. Blake Snell, we know he can just implode and kind of just lose the confidence or whatever it is and just not perform. So, you know, Alex Cobb, Josiah Gray, like there's a lot of risk in the pitching staff. It's guys I believe in, but certainly you can see where it would go awry. And then, you know, the strengths, it's like easy to see the strengths. Would you look at the upside of these guys, Acuna and Witt and Albies and Metal? I mean, it's up and down the roster, right? Julio Rodriguez and Riley Green. If things break right, like you mentioned earlier, it could be a dynamite offense. So that's what I'll be hoping for.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. I like the build. It's like not a Dave Potts team, boring but works team. It's there's a lot of fun to it, a lot of upside with risk at the same time. And when you leave a 15 team draft, there's always gonna be something you're deficient in. There's no way around that. So saves is something you can find. That's if you're gonna be deficient, you can find saves. It's been documented time and time again. You mentioned it. So you got $1,000 fab to play with, and you can have some fun with that. For those wondering, you mentioned Torkelson. He went in the middle of round 18. His ADP was 250 entering tonight. So he's moving up as well with the recent discussion of him and Green making the squad. Before we wrap up, were there any other picks that kind of stood out to you kind of like as a surprise or that you wish you would have been like, oh man, I should have went and got him instead?
Yeah, we talked about him a little bit. Matt Brash for the Mariners. I do think he's going to get the fifth starter role. He got jumped up a lot. Yeah, it was the 18th round. I was hoping maybe to get him in like the 28th or 29th.
He had an ADP of 378 before this.
Yeah, but he's another guy that I do think could thrive. Another guy got sniped on by that same guy in the 15th seat was Aaron Ashby, mm-hmm. who I think is going to start in the bullpen most likely just as, you know, kind of the sixth man. But he stretched out, dominating in spring. The upside for him looks enormous to me as well. So he was one that I was kind of a little bit bummed about missing out on.
And then the other thing I'll ask you, because I know you had your hitters early approach, Are you always hitters early, or do you sometimes go pitchers? You're always okay.
That's what I mean, pretty much always. Yeah, I just feel more confident in my ability to find a good pitcher, good pitchers on FAB than I do to find an everyday stud hitter, right, that you get in those first few rounds. So just kind of a personal preference thing. Obviously, everyone has their own way, but that's where I find the most of my success.
No, I like it. It's different because everyone talks about how the pitching gets pushed up and the main events.
I love the pushing getting pushed up. And it helps all right in my lap.
Yeah, there's five starting pitchers taken in the first round. Like it helps you out tremendously. So that's a good way to go about it. But unless you have any final thoughts on the draft, I think we'll wrap it up there.
No, yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm a loyal listener of Bench with Bubba, and might have been 2 or 3 years since I've been on, so we'll have to
do it. Yeah, too long. It was too long. I know we talk about it, and you know, everything, things come up, pandemics, lockouts, all kinds of fun stuff.
Hopefully no more pandemics.
Yeah, well.
Or lockouts.
I won't get into that.
We can do away with those two.
Yeah, I won't get into it on this show, but there ain't going to be no more pandemics. Let's put it that way. But we'll wrap it up there. Everybody, make sure you follow him if you don't already for some weird reason. He's on Twitter, @DraftCheat. Works over there at Run Pure Sports. A lot of good content. The boys are pumping out over there all the time. And if you ever want to have a party, just watch what they do. They know how to party. But Pete, thanks for joining me, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. Bench with Bubba, episode 457 in the books. Catch you guys next time.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.